This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet. Together listeners, after almost 4 years of going strong, this podcast is on a well-deserved break. While we're gone, we're sharing some of the most impactful episodes we've run to date, focusing on real-world, sustainable-ish problems you face every day. Keep listening for insights and more. Good Together listeners, today's topic is fascinating because it's something that I have actually thought about before in my own way, but had zero idea how to actually think about implementing it. And the idea really is harnessing energy from nature around us. So, you know, of course, we know about solar power, we know about wind energy, but have you ever really thought about the vast untapped energy potential of our oceans? So that's right. There is a sustainable answer to our energy needs that is in progress and possibly, you know, working with these waves crashing into our shores every day. So we're talking about wave energy today. And with more than 70% of the Earth's surface covered by water, wave energy truly does have the potential to become a key contributor to our global energy needs. So this week's guest, Jan Skoldamer, knows definitely a few things about wave energy. He's the founder and CEO of Novi Ocean and is a wave energy developer that uses ocean waves to generate electricity. So welcome, Jan. I wonder if you can just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about how you got started in this field.
Happy to be with you, Laura. This came about with ideas since I was a youngster, actually. I had many patent ideas, and they mainly lay in my drawer for years. and doing other things, I went to become an officer, took an economics degree, then went on to fly in commercial airlines for 25 years. But all the time, this was laying in my drawer, and I saw that the climate crisis was getting more and more imminent. And at the same time, by coincidence, I made a rather good property deal, which gave me some liberty in life. And then I said, what the heck, I can choose between just keep on flying or do something more meaningful. And then chose to continue on my long-awaited wave power device. And,
wow.
Doing that full-time now for 6 years. We're now six persons full-time and have gone quite a bit on development and have quite astonishing numbers. So it all looks very good going forward. And I would perhaps state that, in my opinion, saving the climate would not be possible just by using mainly wind power and solar power. You have to use the vast energy from the oceans.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I've always thought, you know, as a society, examine the different types of energy sources available to us, you know, it has to be a combination of things. And just because we haven't, you know, used something like wave energy en masse yet does not necessarily mean it's not going to happen in the future. And, you know, I live in Seattle, so I'm very much exposed to the ocean. And certainly we spend a lot of time on a little island out here called Fox Island. We see the currents, just the power of the ocean. we just see it in our face all the time. We don't necessarily have a lot of waves out there, but I say this because it is obviously a very, very powerful energy source that exists on our planet. And so I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about like what wave energy is. And obviously that's going to take a while, but then I'm really curious to know, like, why have we not started to harness this type of power yet? Like, that's just a huge question I have, but let's just maybe get started with what wave energy actually is.
Yes, it's a good question by the second one. But first of all, wave energy, it is defined as extracting energy from the motion of the waves. That can be horizontal or vertical. You can use the laws of Newton by, let's say, resisting the movement of the particles, or you use the law of Archimedes with, let's say, lock an air under water, and which is then forced upwards in buoyancy and lifting. So there is a vast combination of solutions out there to extract this energy, and I would say about half of them or a little bit more are going by resisting the particles, and the other half is using buoyancy, and it's kind of interesting to see how this will be converging over the time to very few solutions, which will then be the dominant one going forward. And to continue on that a bit, why it is not, you know, on the market yet, I think it's partly by coincidence. You know, someone came up with wind power many years ago, and finally they come up with the turbines they have today. And of course, had the correct solution been for wave power at the same time, could have been the same size, even bigger, who knows. It's sometimes innovations comes in different decades, but it doesn't mean necessarily that wind power or sun power is better. It's just been the timing is different, but it will happen. There is no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, to me, it sounds like it's something that you're right. It's quite literally been staring us in the face for centuries, but we haven't really figured out how to harness it. And so when you mentioned earlier in your intro that you had patents sitting around, tell me a little bit more about that. Are they related to wave energy? And how did you come up with that? Was that in university, in school?
No, it wasn't. Since I was a youngster, I was driving motorbikes illegally since I was very young, and you know, worked on those, and then cars also a bit too early, you might say. And so I was curious about mechanics and looked at boat racing and stuff like that. And then I came up with different ideas, which weren't, you know, patented, like the patent ideas, I would say more. And I've seen at least four of them come to market 25 years later in different areas, and seeing them come to life, being large innovations worth a lot of money, which is fine. But then I, you know, had this one laying in my drawer, and I thought this can be just as large as anyone else of my ideas. But regarding patents then, so during the last years, we have been making or drawing up 3 patents, and they are now approved in about 15 to 20 countries worldwide. Those countries which do have the largest waves, mainly on the west coast of the continents, of course also on the US, Canada, Alaska side, and you know, South America, Africa, and Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia, Japan, etc. Huge waves potential.
Interesting. So you're saying that, yeah, you have this background really understanding turbines and really the mechanics in that. And so, you know, maybe walk us through a little bit of, you know, what this potentially would like look like. I mean, is this something sitting on a platform? Is this something that's, you know, deep below the ocean? Like, where is the harnessing of the energy happening? So listeners, you're probably visualizing, I mean, I'm at least visualizing what a turbine is, right? The mechanics, the inner workings of something like that, that are required to, you know, harness energy. But I'm curious to know a little bit about, like, yeah, what it comes across visually like.
Yes. First of all, the listeners, if they're curious, just Google Norvi Ocean, then you will get to our homepage, and you will see videos and illustrations showing how it works. But basically, just by this audio, it consists of 3 parts: a large rectangular float in the first iteration, 38 meters long, 8 meters wide, 4 meters high. So that one can lift up to 600 tons out of the water by buoyancy. And the connection to that, in the middle, there is a cylinder which is water filled, and then the piston rod is then connected to the seafloor via a wire. And on top of the whole thing is a water turbine, a Pelton turbine, the same as used in the hydropower plants. So perhaps it would be good to repeat how a hydropower plant has been used for the last 200 years. You have a dam up in the mountains, then you have a tube going down, perhaps 500 meters, and the weight of that water creates then 50 bars of pressure, a very high pressure, and water is then released onto a turbine, Pelton turbine, which spins around at high speed, which again drives the generator. So we have the same thing. We call it the hydropower plant at sea.
Hmm.
So the cylinder then pumps the same water with the same pressure up to the same Pelton turbine, which drives the same generator, and then the cable goes into land with the electricity. So it's really simple. And the pumping motion, if anyone can think back in the good old days when you have the garden pump, the one with the handle,
yep.
It pumps in the same way. So you would just pump water a bit harder than, of course, you can do with your hands. But it's the same principle. You just pump water in the lifting phase onto the Pelton turbine. And that water hits that turbine with up to 400 kilometers per hour, up to 1,000 liters per second. So
Wow. Imagine
taking your neighbor's van and crashing it into the brick wall at 400 kilometers per hour every second. That's the force.
Well, and I mean, what's so fascinating about this is it's not requiring, you know, the burning of fossil fuels or any type of, you know, unsustainable, source. You know, I mean, that's what's so interesting to me about this specific power source. And so one of the things that stuck out to me as we were talking, other than just the sheer force of things, is the list of countries who have granted the patents and are excited about this technology. So how are they planning on using it? I mean, is there like a big city that is potentially just going to go all in on harnessing this for their population? Or tell me a little bit more about the international side of things.
Yes, it's, let's say, in Europe first then, the interest is growing. And the European Commission has set forth now a plan to see 40 gigawatt of ocean energy in the water by 2050, 500 megawatt in the water by 2030. And that's both tidal power and wave energy. The wave energy potential, though, is 10 times larger than tidal power. Tidal power, by the way, is the horizontal streams of water flowing around the coastline. Very often when they have a narrow, gap between, between Madagascar and Africa, for instance, you can have more tidal power, also some places in Canada and the US. But anyway, wave power is then set to become quite large. And in Europe, they will do the same thing as they did with wind power and sun power. You get subsidies first, or a nicer word is incentives.
Yeah.
It means the same thing. You get different sort of incentives or subsidies on the spot price or CapEx support to build this stuff. Right now in the UK and in Canada and Taiwan, they offer something like 25 cents per kilowatt hour for tidal and some also for wave power. Taiwan is actually the one with the best offer right now. They offer basically 25 cents also for wave power. So it's coming. Plus, all islands, there's 2,000 islands around the world that has a vast potential and need for green power.
Yes.
Now running on diesel, plus many remote locations running on diesel. And they very often have a cost of more than 25 cents per kilowatt hour, which is a natural non-subsidies potential for this sort of energy.
Well, that's nice to hear that, yes, governments are making it more financially feasible for, corporations and governments and things of this nature to use this type of, power source. I think is really interesting. And of course, makes sense. I mean, I can't even imagine if you're on a remote island thinking about powering your entire island with diesel. I mean, just the logistics there, in addition to how awful it is for the climate, is kind of staggering to think about. So you talked a little bit about, wave versus tidal energy. And that makes sense to me, right? Like when I was first talking, I was actually talking more about tidal energy, although of course I see the power of wave energy as well. And so curious to know a little bit more about, you know, maybe what, you know, maybe the differences, not necessarily the differences between the way that they work, because you've already explained that, but maybe a little bit more about the differences in adoption or, you know, if both are working together, obviously to harness the power of the ocean to get us towards, you know, more net neutral, net zero type energy sources.
Yes, they are complementary in many ways. Tidal energy, you know, fluctuates as a consequence of the moon and the Earth rotation, mm-hmm. plus more every 6 hours with full power and then no power.
Exactly.
So it's a different cycle. Wind power is, of course, then dependent on wind, and of course, some power we know when we have it and when we don't have it. But the interesting thing is, with then wind creates waves over time and distance. So that's why on the west coast of the U.S., for instance, you have the waves, you know, being you know, larger and larger crossing the Pacific. And when they hit the west coast, the waves remains for days. Even when the wind goes down, mm-hmm. Then the waves remains afterwards. So basically, you can say around the world that 40% of the hours of the month, there is almost no wind and no sun. Those 40% of those hours, what do? We burn fossils.
Yeah.
A lot. But wave power is then off-phased in timing with wind power. So when the wind goes down, you still have waves for a few more days. Then the wind is building up again, so the wind power comes back online, and then wind goes down again, and you have wave power. So they are, you know, not of course perfectly in balance, but they are, you know, off-phased and then very much complementary. So if an owner of a wind power plant or sun power plant combined, then is better. But if they add wave power to it, it's much better for the grid, because you will have power basically 24/7. Without having to churn up that coal power plant or that diesel power unit.
That's very cool.
So you can choose between, if you're a utility owner, either you use wind, solar, and fossils, or you use basically wind, solar, and wave power, I would like to say. And of course, that's a bit on the, you know, harsh side, but that's the fundamental of it. Of course, storage is also possible. But storage by batteries, of today's batteries on grid scale, is basically impossible, because it's such a large need for it, or so many gigawatts. Mm-hmm. So it's almost impossible. And will also take, of course, lots of lithium and cobalt to extract. So if you can have an energy source which comes in directly, not needing storage at that scale, it is much, much better for the environment than using the fossils or just batteries to balance out the whole thing.
As we transition from summer into fall, it doesn't mean that we need to miss out on grilling season. Honestly, nothing beats a juicy burger or vegan sandwich of your choice on a soft bun, but at the same time, who wants to give up their health goals? That's where Hero Bread comes in. I've been using Hero Bread for weeks now, and let me tell you, it's a game changer. Their brioche buns are perfect for backyard barbecues and sandwiches. They're soft, fluffy, and delicious, and honestly, you'd never guess that they have zero net carbs and no sugar. But what really blew me away were their new Hawaiian rolls. So I made sliders last weekend, and my family really couldn't believe they were low carb. The texture is spot on, and they really do melt in your mouth. As someone who does enjoy watching my sugar intake, Hero Bread has been a lifesaver. I can enjoy sandwiches, toasts, even French toast on weekends without the guilt. It's packed with fiber and protein too. Want to keep the carbs out of your bread without sacrificing flavor? Get 10% off at hero.co with code GOODTOGETHER. That's GOODTOGETHER at hero.co. Fair very interesting. Yeah, I, you know, it's funny, I had never really considered, well, I mean, not in depth, the we know that the environmental impact of batteries is significant, right, for the reasons you just mentioned. But you're correct also in thinking about, you know, the storage situation, you know, can be, while, you know, the power source could be very environmentally friendly, right, the storage of then said power could be inherently not super environmentally friendly because of what you just mentioned. So that's kind of an interesting duality there. I also liked how you mentioned the balancing of these different, you know, eco-friendly or really earth-powered power sources. I mean, you're right. In some seasons, there might not be as much sun, so then it could be balanced. The solar situation could be balanced by the wind, etc. So I find that extremely interesting. So tell me a little bit more. I mean, you talked a little bit about this earlier, but I guess, you know, for me, the big question is, like, this seems like a no-brainer. Like, it's crazy to me that, you know, considering humans have been on this earth for centuries and centuries, it seems to me to be crazy that we haven't tried to harness this energy previously. I mean, I'm sure, are there any sort of, like, historical attempts at doing this in any form or fashion? And, you know, why haven't we started doing it on a broader scale sooner?
Very good question. I might add, by the way, just as on the side, that our system now in a 1-6 scale is right now powering a small island outside Stockholm. Adding, you know, we have a cable into land, and on that island there's two houses which do get electricity from our unit. They also have solar power, so it's still functioning right now. It's online, and I can look at it, and it's out there doing its job. So this is not a dream. This is something that do work right now, 24/7 for us on a smaller scale. And there are also some other ones out there that do work. But basically, going back history-wise, the first unit was made more than 200 years ago for wave power, like a turbine out in the water. Then many have tried different solutions. Many do give some energy, but they are too costly in general. And that is because the guys using the particles, as mentioned in the beginning, they need, in our calculations, 30 times more steel in the water or air in the water than if you use buoyancy, in our opinion. So they get very easily too heavy. And when it's too heavy, of course, you have a long carbon payback time, but it becomes also very costly. So most of them have not been able to be, you know, business-wise possible. Then you have the one with buoyancy, and most of the other ones are round floats there going up and down in the water. But you are restricted to about maximum 8 to 10 meters diameter. Otherwise, you'll be cutting the smaller waves. And then you can extract, in theory, something like 100 kilowatt on average at the most. And, you know, wind power today is 10 megawatt or more. So we need very many units. And then add to that, they're very complex. Very often they have cogwheels and accumulators and very fancy, let's say, system inside, which wear out and cost it to build. So they have a problem then with selling this to the utility companies at the proper price. Our system then is a bit different. It's not perhaps the main thing for the listener, because you just want to learn about wave power. But it's important to be light, have few parts, simple part, well-pruned parts, and be very cost-effective. And our numbers show that we have this right now. So we do think that we are one of the very few ones that are going to make this happen in real life due to the simplicity and those things I just mentioned. Many other ones are unfortunately in the other side of that bandwagon, and you have to be economical, has to last for preferably 40 years out there, and then you are and have a carbon payback time as ours of slightly more than 1 year, as opposed to solar panels, perhaps 7 years. So it's important to look at all the numbers and then encourage those through subsidies and some risk taking to go with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if I may add, I do personally believe that looking at the numbers, we seem to be better mind my words, and offshore wind power in every aspect.
Mm.
It's a strong statement, but we look to be that, especially against floating offshore wind, because they're very large, very heavy, and complex. So we'll see. But that's what it looks like.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. Yeah.
If I may add, of course, we need the energy mix. So I'm not, of course, not against the other ones. I'm just saying that we are needed in this mix to, you know, reduce the amount of fossil used when there's no wind and no sun particularly.
Of course. Well, and the thing I was going to say is, look, I mean, it has to make economic sense for all the reasons you just mentioned. And subsidies and things of that nature, while they are great and necessary, you know, we can't have those be the total reliance of the system. So that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, one more question that I had to you before we, I mean, you know, I can't believe we're getting close to time already, which is crazy. But for me, one of the things we like to do on this podcast is tie current events back to the overall topic. And so, you know, I believe because of climate change, we're starting to see more and more extreme weather events around the world. And so I'm curious to know how this type of changing pattern, you know, cycles in this situation is impacting something like wave energy, right? How is that working?
Well, of course, the hurricanes are more violent
yes.
now than they used to be and more frequent, which is, of course, a concern in certain locations, like in the Caribbean, for instance. So the structure must be able to take that force. And our system is designed to take waves of 30 meters, which is kind of high. And it's very light in the water, like a surfboard. So we're not that hampered by high waves or winds like perhaps some other ones. The lifting force is then 20 times higher than the surf force, which is important. But of course, it's a challenge. It can come as a surprise in the future. I might mention that we also will have solar panels on top, about 400 square meters at least with that on top. And why? Well, we have the platform anyway. We have the cable, we have the mooring lines, everything, systems on board. So it makes sense just to use that platform anyway to extract some solar panels. And as you mentioned, in the summer times, for instance, or in seasons, there might be less waves, especially the four summer months normally. And then, of course, you have more sun power. So it makes sense to extract, you know, all that sun power during daytime, especially in the summer when there is less waves, mm-hmm. and vice versa. So we have a hybrid concept, and which might be interesting.
That is interesting. Some. Absolutely. And I guess, you know, another question that I had too was you mentioned the infrastructure, and it sounds like the infrastructure exists already in many places due to, to offshore wind energy, et cetera. But when we think about like the environmental impact of such a thing, like how do these infrastructure, these cables, et cetera, like impact the natural wildlife in the oceans?
What has done quite a few investigations onto possibly negative impact, both on tidal power and wave power.
Mm.
And so far, one has basically seen none. There is no harm done to the, you know, animals or fish, you know, swimming around the turbines. If it's tidal turbines, they avoid those propellers going around. And for wave power, if there's no leakage, they have seen nothing. It's even so that the shells and stuff, they start growing onto the, you know, whatever is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On the seafloor, they say, happy, we have a new home. So they start growing onto that point. So it seems to be very positive. If you then compare, of course, to wind power, it's different. I might perhaps want to mention something which is less known about wind power, which I think is important. It has to do with insects. I think we all know about the birds are being, you know, killed by wind power in
yes.
certain mm-hmm. areas. But one has measured now the impact on insects in Germany. Every, you know, wind turbine in Germany kills about 40 kilos of insect
wow.
per year. It's 40 kilos. And that's a large volume. It would probably cover more than your living room. And how many turbines do you have? You have 28,000 turbines just in Germany. So imagine 28,000 living rooms with dead insects every year. And what have not measured, you know, the hits on the car in the evening when you drive your car in Germany, the hits nowadays is 10% of what you had 20 years ago in the evening. So this is a bit, you know, perhaps a bit delicate to talk about since we are working with wave power. But I mention it because I think it should be addressed. I think the wind power guys should see if they can in some way avoid this this impact. Insects and bees, for instance, are extremely important for our future. So it's something which is kind of hushed about a bit. But I think it's important to, you know, call it by fact and try to solve this and then look on to perhaps other solutions which do not have this impact.
Absolutely. No, and it's something where you're right. I think I'd certainly, most of us have heard of the birds, but correct. I mean, thinking about the insect impact and bees and pollinators, et cetera, it is something that's important. And I appreciate you talking about that because it's something I personally haven't really talked about. And so just to be clear, though, with the turbines, you know, utilized by wave energy, you're saying that the, you know, animals are just avoiding it. Is that correct? They're just not going anywhere near it.
Yes, our turbine is in a closed circuit, so the water goes around inside the cylinder and inside the turbine. So there's no salt water, no crabs going into our turbine. It's just the same water going around and around and around.
So it's a closed system.
That water from the garden pump, it goes nowhere. It just goes back into the same cylinder.
Very interesting. Well, I mean, we could probably talk about this all day, like I say, with all of my guests, but it has been fascinating just very much skimming the surface of the, you know, potential of wave energy with you, Jan. So I guess just in closing, I'm curious to know, from where you're sitting as, you know, someone that's on the forefront of this type of energy application, or even just someone as a person, what is exciting you the most about the changes going on in the eco-friendly and sustainable lifestyle movement right now?
I think it's great to see the young generation growing up. I also have, you know, kids, and of course they are very much aware about this issue, and especially this summer also, but it's even more on the chart for most people. Unfortunately, the humans are like this, that gradual changes are not that taken as seriously. The COVID was coming rapidly, and there was billions coming into that problem in months. This gradual, 0.01 degrees increase in temperature per decades is something which people do not experience that much. So it's been, you know, we're kicking the ball down the road, especially with the larger corporations looking the other way. I think now they see that they will have themselves an economical backdrop from this over time, because if you continue with this, it will be more and more expensive and it will impact more and more people. So unfortunately, it has been, you know, going all the way to this summer, I think, until most people realize, oh, shit, we have to, you know, do something radical about this. So the new IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act in U.S. by Biden and company, is good, and the similar now coming in Europe more and more, you know, is coming our way. So, in some way, it's good to learn that things are happening. It should have happened, you know, 25 years ago.
Sure,
but that's the way humans are. They kick the can down the road.
Yes,
but I do think now that, you know, a company like ours do get more and more attention, like we're now on this podcast, for instance, and many other podcasts. We do get quite a lot of media attention, and people want to support us in different ways. And also for your audience, most welcome to look into the webpage. And if you like, you can contact me on LinkedIn if you have something which you think is important for our future. If you know people in utility sector, oil and gas companies, whatever, that want to do some changes, even philanthropists, you know, give them a hint about us, and we're welcome to, have a dialogue with anyone.
Absolutely.
That wants to see this happening.
Absolutely. Well, we will include links to your company and everything in our show notes. So listeners, don't worry, you can find all of that on brightly.eco. But overall, it's just, it's been, just been such a fascinating conversation. And I wanted to say thank you.
And thank you, Laura. And what I say to other podcasters is that since you have this program now, you're welcome on board the full-size unit in about 2.5 years.
Right. Well, we'll see what we can do about that. Well, have a great day. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.